Blog Talk Radio.
Come in. Hey, good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with...
Dave Binkley from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and the Spaceship One. And we're here along with just ourselves.
Yeah, Gar's not feeling well today, so in addition to not being here, I guess he's not going to be doing horrible horror tonight. Doggone it, get well, fella.
Yep. Talked to him this afternoon, helped him out with a little problem, then he went back to bed. So that's, you know, just the way of a life of a ghoul, you know?
There you go. Sometimes.
Sometimes you feel bad and sometimes you feel worse.
Yeah. It ain't easy being a ghoul over day. But it's fun being a radio horror host, and we've got fun for you tonight in the way of two, count them, two confession stories. Barry Craig is back. Haven't had him on in a long, long time.
Did we actually use him before?
We must, because I had artwork saved up. I think we did.
Ah, okay. Here. Okay.
I can always scan the schedule. Do a little searchy. But that and Mr. and Mrs. North, I'm not sure about them. Have we had them on before?
We have. We've had Mr. and Mrs. North. I don't see the... I did a quick scan, and mine says the only one we have is the one we're about to show tonight. But interesting series, as this comes in late and really kind of past the golden age of radio. It doesn't pop up till... I think 1951 is when Barry Craig shows up on radio.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a kind of, and you can tell because one, the music is a little different, a little hipper maybe. It's also got that sound of being pre-recorded, inserted type thing. Not like it was written directly to be perfect for certain situations in there, you know.
Yeah. No, Dave, we did not ever have Barry Craig, so first time to the channel. Way back on March 23rd of 2018, 3 years ago, we had Mr. and Mrs. North in the Crooked Ring when we were doing a fight.
So do boxing. Boxing, yeah.
Yeah, and let's see. We are having them tonight, and that is it. And we've got some planned in the future with future shows. So two kind of rarish radio shows, at least for us. And
for us, yeah, because we don't focus on the mysteries. We get some in there, you know, especially the Casey crime photographer. But his also a lot of times almost has a touch of paranormal type things with it, simply because the guy that wrote, Alonzo Dean Cole, wrote every episode of that, and he was also responsible for The Witch's Tale. So, you know, it's easy to turn around and do, slide something like that in there in a believable fashion when you've written so much of the horror.
Yeah. And tonight's are more of mysteries than anything else. And I'm kind of intrigued by Mr. and Mrs. North. They're fictional American amateur detectives created by Francis and Richard Lockridge. They have written 26 Mr. and Mrs. North novels. There was a Broadway play, a motion picture, and a handful of radio and television series. They started in the 1930s in vignettes written by Richard Lockridge for the New York Sun, and he brought them back for short stories later in the New Yorker. They were collected in Mr. and Mrs. North in 1936, but the first novel doesn't come out until 1940, The Norths Meet Murder. Ooh. They contain carefully crafted puzzles, and the Lockridges usually play fair with their readers in the books. They're neat characters, and what I found interesting is often it was Mrs. North who solved the mysteries.
And it was almost always Pamela North that got them into that trouble or into that mystery to begin with as well, because she kept egging her husband. Well, he's not a detective. He's a publisher. of stories
yeah.
and books. And it's her constant nagging almost that gets them into these different things. And as you, as Dale mentioned, there were two versions of Mr. and Mrs. North, one that was a 1950 or 42 to 54. And that's mm-hmm. with Alice Frost and Joseph Curtin. Now, to me, although you hear more of the ones of the second series, but with Barbara Britton, but what I think the earlier ones were far more interesting mysteries. And that's one of the ones we have here tonight, because they would go on in 46. They received the first Best Radio Drama Edgar Award from the Mystery Writers of America, in a tie with CBS's The Adventures of Ellery Queen. We'll have we got a couple of those in the future as well.
Yeah.
So it's just really interesting. And I think the characters are a little bit different. And I think the mysteries are a little bit better in the first series.
Yep. And the way you describe Mrs. North, that it almost made it natural that Gracie Allen would play her in the movie.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah.
That one I didn't catch. I didn't see the movie.
Yeah, that one's from 19-something.
Because she was also in the Philo Vance. She was a big friend of the guy that wrote Philo Vance, and one movie he wrote was the Gracie Allen murder case, and she was in that as well. So she did a few things without George. George didn't do a whole lot without her until television came around. He did some visiting to, like, Jack Benny, a couple of comedy shows. But Gracie, she reached out to a little differently and a little further than George did during their earlier years. So,
yeah. And Gracie starred with William Post in the movie version. It's a 1942 deal from MGM Theater.
That would be great. I'm going to try and dig that up. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I think I have to, too, because I love Gracie. Dave, and you made me love her by working with you on this show. You know, I've been exposed to, you know, not that I didn't know them, not that I didn't hear them, but I'm becoming more intimate with them as we listen to all these great shows.
And I tell you something, if you want to learn about Gracie, George did a lot of writing for them. They had writers as well, but early on, he was their writer. And he had all, he was in charge of all content. It didn't go, if he didn't pass it, it didn't go through. He wrote a book, Gracie, A Love Story, that is so
yeah.
heartwarming and yet so absolutely hilarious that if you have the chance to peruse that a little bit, you'll get locked in. It's just such a wonderful story. And what a great way to find out about Gracie Allen.
She was something else. And we have radio program from Mr. and Mrs. North. This one's called The Contagious Confession. Now, which series is this one from, Dave?
This is from the first series. And early on, it started in 41. This is from 1943. So this is very early on. And this is one of the Alice Frost ones where she was Pamela North.
All right. Well, let's get started. What is the exact broadcast date, or if we have it, if it matters?
The exact broadcast date I have is September 22nd, 1943.
The Adventures of Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Alice Frost and Joseph Curtin, and brought to you by
Woodbury, 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 for the skin you love to touch.
Jerry and Pamela North often drive Bill Wigand to the verge of insanity. However, for all their bewildering antics, they often help him, too. And at times, he even goes so far as to ask them for advice. Tonight is such a time, because he's faced with a dizzy situation. Now, as Bill seats himself in the North's living room, Jerry says to him,
All right, Bill, now what's this great problem that's puzzling you?
It's a case that I'm working on.
I know.
Somebody crept to the window and shot him in the middle of his dinner.
What?
Yes, I read about it in the paper. He was dining alone.
Who was?
Walter Middleton, of course, dear. Mrs. Middleton's been dead for years, and the son and daughter were out, so he was alone. The butler heard the shot and ran into the dining room, but Mr. Middleton was already dead. It's been on all the front pages.
Oh, I only read the funnies.
He was rich as anything, so there's the motive. Cigarette, Bill?
No, thanks.
The son and daughter are the most obvious suspects, so that lets them out. How about some candy, Bill?
No, not just now. Why does it let them out?
That's too obvious. Fruit?
No, thanks.
Nuts?
Yeah, I'm beginning to think so.
Bill, is this Middleton case what you wanted to ask us about?
Yeah, it has a screwy angle. I thought it would be just up the north alley. You see, we have two confessions.
You mean two people have confessed to the same murder?
That's right, and each claims he worked alone.
Well, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's what I said. And since sense doesn't work in this case, I thought intuition might. How about it, Pam?
I have to have something to go on. Who are these people who confessed, Bill? Not the son and daughter?
No, there are a couple of friends of the Middletons, Larry Chapman and George Warwick.
Oh, can I meet them?
Sure, we're holding them at headquarters.
Well, let's go.
All right.
I wonder what's in back of it, Jerry.
I know. They heard confessions good for the soul.
The dining room window was open, so I just pointed the gun through it and fired.
That's impossible, Larry.
Why?
Because I did.
Here we go again.
Look, Lieutenant, doesn't priority count around here? I confessed first.
But you're lying.
May I ask a question?
Go right to it, then.
Why did you gentlemen kill Mr. Middleton?
Well, it's just that
it's
I...
like this.
Well,
that is...
What I was going to say
is
that...
Hold it. Now, you, Warwick, why did you shoot Middleton?
Well, sir,
I owed him some money, and I couldn't pay him, so I killed him.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
You mean I put them in your mouth? You never even thought of it.
I don't care what you say. I don't care what anyone says. I killed Walter Middleton. I hope to die if I didn't.
It's the other way around, George.
This isn't getting us anywhere.
Well, why don't we toss a coin? Winner gets the electric chair.
Wait a minute, Jerry. Now, look. If either of you shot Mr. Middleton, you had to have a gun. All right. Tell us where the gun is, and we'll see if it matches the bullet.
I threw the gun away.
So did I. I mean, that's what I did. I demand you hold me for murder.
You ought to hold him for plagiarism instead.
Where did you throw away the gun?
Who, me?
Either of you. Both of you.
I don't remember.
I wrapped the gun in some old newspaper and threw it in some bushes.
What bushes? Where?
That's what I don't remember.
Well, Pam, you're doing fine. Have any hunches yet?
I have a hunch they're both lying.
That's no hunch. It's a logical conclusion based on observation of the fact.
You must believe me. I tell you, I killed Walter Middleton.
With your little hatchet, yeah, we know.
Now, look. Don't either of you fellas want to change your stories?
No. I killed Walter Middleton.
He didn't. I did.
Okay.
Here comes the policeman.
Oh, yes, he has David Middleton with him.
Hello, Lieutenant Wagon.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Mr. and Mrs. Noah.
Hello.
Lieutenant, I don't know how you're going to like this. Maybe it's good and maybe it ain't.
All right, what's up?
Well, you sent me to question young Middleton here and check up on his whereabouts on the night of the murder, so I did.
Yes.
Well, what do you think he tells me? He says he killed his father.
Oh, that's swell. He what?
Yeah, he wants to confess.
Bill, it looks like you've hit the jackpot.
Well, I took your advice, Pam, and released our three murderers.
But what if it turns out that one of them's telling the truth?
Yeah, we can always pick him up again. We certainly have nothing on either one of them as yet.
Besides, if one of them is guilty, this is a better way to trap him. Give him enough rope.
But, darling, you know what some people do with rope.
What?
Skip.
Oh, we'll have to work fast before he has a chance.
Do you have any plans?
I'd like to talk to Helen Middleton. Maybe she can tell us something.
Okay. But if she tells us that she's the one who killed her father, there'll be a second murder. And I'll commit it.
After all, Larry and George are both very dear friends of mine, and David is my brother. You can't expect me to say anything against them.
But if one of them killed your father...
Oh, none of them did, I'm sure.
Why?
Well, I just know it.
Well, then... Perhaps you can tell us something to help clear them. They're all under suspicion.
But I don't know what to say. told the police all I know, and I've tried to answer your questions.
But unfortunately, it hasn't helped us much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You can't think of any reason why they should all confess?
No.
All right. Well, we won't keep you any longer, Miss Middleton.
Thank you. I hope you'll pardon me if I don't show you out, but I'm so terribly tired, and I don't want to go downstairs again.
Oh, that's quite all right. Goodbye.
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 Well, Pam, what do you think?
You forget, Jerry. I'm not supposed to think. I'm supposed to feel. You know, intuition.
Well, then, what do you feel?
Bewildered. I don't understand. But... Oh!
I'm sorry, madam. I didn't mean to alarm you.
You ought to give more warning when you pop out of nowhere.
Not nowhere, madam. I was concealed in this archway.
Eavesdropping on our conversation with Miss Middleton, huh?
If you wish to call it that, I call it detecting.
Are you a detective?
Unofficially, like yourselves. Officially, I'm the Middleton's butler.
Oh. Oh, you're the one who discovered the body.
Yes, madam.
Perhaps you can tell us something.
I can tell you a great deal. I'm a profound student of crime. Oh, fascinating subject.
Yes.
I'll tell you this. You're on the right track. It's not suicide. It's murder.
Well, of course it is. Nobody suggested it wasn't.
After all, there was no gun near the body.
How do you know?
Well, I've...
How do you know I didn't find a gun and hide it to make it look like murder?
But there's no earthly reason why you should.
Uh-uh. Jumping to conclusions. First rule of a good detective. Never jump to conclusions.
But you just said yourself that it was murder.
True. As a matter of fact, there was no gun. But you shouldn't take my word for it. Why are you looking at me like that? Ah, perhaps you think I killed Mr. Middleton. Good. Very good. Never overlook anything. First rule of a good detective.
I thought you just said that the first
yes,
rule was never...
Yes, very good. However, you're wrong. I couldn't have done it.
Why?
The butler never does it. Not anymore. That went out with the bustle. But I'll give you a clue if you want it.
What?
In the back of the house. A little bungalow. Young David Middleton's studio.
What about it?
No one is allowed in it but the young master himself. The windows are all blacked out. My wife does the cleaning here in the main house. But even she's not allowed in there. Nobody is. Doesn't that strike you as significant?
It certainly does.
What mysteries does that studio contain? One time I tried to find out, but young David caught me. He was very angry.
Haven't you any idea what he keeps there?
No, but I'm sure it must be important. If you want the key to the mystery, find out the secret of the studio.
Okay, thanks for telling us. Come on, then.
All right. Goodbye, Mr. Butler.
Goodbye.
Well, Jerry, let's go and see if we can get in the studio.
Oh, don't be silly, Ben. That butler's slap happy.
But there might be something to that story of the studio.
Nonsense.
But suppose there is, Jerry. We shouldn't overlook anything.
First rule of a good detective.
I mean it.
Well, we'll tell Bill if he wants to investigate, he can.
I think we ought to.
But, Pam...
We're right here.
I don't think we should.
Oh, Jerry, please.
No.
Please.
No.
It in the clump of trees. Come on, Jerry. Careful, nobody sees us.
You know, if young Middleton catches this, he'd be within his legal rights if he shot us.
Oh, I can't see that it would hurt any more than if it were illegal. I mean, if you were shot, you wouldn't care, would you, whether it was legal or not, especially if you were dead. Oh, let's not let him catch us, huh?
You're right. Let's not. Let... Be careful. This moonlight's pretty bright. Stay close to the bushes.
All right.
I don't know why I let you talk me into things like this.
Because you're sweet.
I think it's your baby blue eyes. They look so sad when you can't have your way. Like a calf's. Well, here we are.
Calf's eyes are brown.
Somehow that seems irrelevant. Now that we're here, what do we do?
Let's see if we can find some way to get in. Golly, it seems kind of spooky, doesn't it? It's all dark.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Oh, wait a minute. I thought I heard something. I guess I was wrong. Well, now, what do you want to do?
I think I'll just try the door. Ah! Oh, Jerry! Jerry, how can laugh. I've been shot.
You're all wet.
I'm not. I've been shot. Oh. Oh, I am, aren't I? I thought it was blood.
No, darling. You just walked into a trap. A bucket of water fell on your head.
What's going on here?
Oh, hello, Middleton. My wife decided to take a shower.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. North. I hope you're all right.
I guess so. Only I'm cold.
Well, come on back to the house and you can warm up. I'm sorry about this, but I don't like people to go near my studio.
Yeah, so we found out. You know, that's quite an effective booby trap you have there, young fellow. Isn't it, Bam? I beg your pardon?
And come to bed.
I can't help it, Pam, when I think of the way you looked. Like a drowned cat.
Before I was a calf.
Well, you will go snooping into other people's business.
Well, Bill asked us to help him.
I'm afraid you weren't much help.
I guess not. You know, Jerry, in spite of it all, I like that David Middleton.
Yeah, he seems to be a nice kid.
I would like to know what he's got in that studio.
Maybe he's hoarding sugar.
Oh, now what?
I'll answer, dear. Hello? Yes?
This is George Warwick.
Oh, yes.
I've been trying to get hold of Lieutenant Wygant. Do you know where he is?
No, but I think I can find him for you.
Good. If you and he come out to my house right away, I'll show you something very important.
What is it?
I've just discovered a very important clue. Now I know who killed Mr. Middleton.
Well, I thought you said you killed him.
I'll explain everything. How soon can you get here?
I don't know. As soon as I find Bill.
All right, I'll be waiting. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Who is it, Jerry?
George Warwick. You better put your clothes on again, darling. One of our murderers has something to tell us. And this time, it's not a confession.
Well, this is it.
I wonder what he wants to show us.
Well, it better be good. I don't like coming out in the middle of the night for nothing.
I doubt that this will be as good as he promised. Somehow, I don't trust
Wait
that.
A minute, Bill.
What is it, Pat?
I think there's somebody standing by the corner of the house.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, boy, he's shooting at us.
Stop. Hey!
Intermission for a message of special interest to the ladies.
If you are not a user of Woodbury Cold Cream, I think I know why. It isn't because you believe your complexion is already flawless. Doubt if any girl has such a perfect skin she doesn't want to make it lovelier. No, the reason probably is you haven't yet been convinced that Woodbury Cold Cream can make a real difference in your complexion. But that just proves you haven't yet tried Woodbury Cold Cream. For using it once will show you how extra effective it is. You see, Woodbury Cold Cream isn't just another cold cream at all. It's a complete beauty cream. It actually does everything for your skin. Why not take 3 minutes tonight to see all it can do? Smooth the silky cream over your face and throat. It leaves your skin sparkling clean, glowing. Now pat on more. And this time, let a trace remain on your skin overnight. Tomorrow, well, you may scarcely believe your eyes. Your skin will have such a radiant, new, smooth look. Now, that's the famous Woodbury Beauty Nightcap. Do it every night. But don't forget, Woodbury Cold Cream is as grand for daytime beautifying. It leaves your skin looking lovelier. Helps your makeup have that professional finish you envied. Woodbury Cold Cream gives such remarkable results because of four specialing, softening, smoothing ingredients.
Oops.
And because of another exclusive ingredient working constantly to purify the cream in the jar in case blemish-causing germs should get in. Try this amazing, complete beauty cream. Get Woodbury Cold Cream tonight.
Also makes a good filling for donuts.
There you go. Hey, I took a minute to look up Alice Frost here, Dale, and what interesting career she had. She debuted on the radio at age 16 as a singer, participating in a duet with a friend on a Minneapolis station. By 1933, she was a member of the cast of Criminal Court. In 1934, she was one of the ghost voices during the CBS WABC's 45 Minutes in Hollywood. She was inaugural member of Orson Welles' Mercury Theater on radio and on stage, and was one of his favorite actresses. An item in 1939 newspaper noted Frost's art of mimicry, saying Alice is known to her friends as the girl of 100 voices, a talent which originated from her childhood when she heard ministers who visited her home when they returned from their missions in far-off places like Siam, India, or Japan. The missionaries delighted in teaching the little girl their various Hindustani, Javanese, or Far Eastern dialects. By 1938, she had already played more than 30 different types of roles. An item in the 1937 newspaper reported, it's nothing unusual for her to appear in as many as 8 network shows a week, each calling for a different role. In quick succession, she had been a comedian, a tragedian, an ingenuine, a mother, a daughter, and a witch. Wow.
That's amazing. What talent.
In the 1930s, that's why we didn't get to know her. She was too talented. In the 1930s, Frost was hostess, secretary, heckler, and general all-around actress on Sunday on Stupnagel and Bud. That was actually, Stupnagel and Bud was a vaudeville team. Didn't make it much out of the 30s when before they split up, as so many vaudeville teams do. They just can't last. The egos kind of get in the way, I guess.
Yeah.
Late that decade, she appeared regularly. Yeah, she regularly appeared on Melody and Madness and Undercover Squad. Listen to some of these shows she was on. Now, this is just some, Dale. The Shadow, which makes sense. She was with Orson Welles in Mercury Theater. Grand Central Station, Campbell Playhouse, What Would You Have Done, On Broadway, Famous Jury Trials, Al Pierce and His Gang, Dave Harum, Lorenzo Jones, Suspense, Aunt Jenny's Real Life Stories, The Fat Man, Romance, The Big Story, Les Miserables. That was also an Orson Welles miniseries. The Mercury Theater on the Air, Mr. District Attorney, Johnny Presents, FBI and Peace and War, Don Ameche's True Life Stories, and Columbia Workshop. And that's just the top of the ice cube, you know?
What a slacker. She actually appeared in 2 episodes of Twilight Zone, The 16mm Shrine, and she appeared in It's a Good Life.
Ah, okay. She must have been the older maid in the 16mm Shrine.
I would have guessed, yeah.
Yeah, because that was Ida Lupino who was the lead in that episode.
Yeah.
So
two good ones.
Yeah.
Also appeared on the Virginian, Bonanza, and Wagon Train. Also found work on Ironside, Adam 12, Policewoman, and Beretta. She fed the bird, I guess. I don't know. Her final television work included a 1978 visit to Fantasy Island and her last role on Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Wow. No, that was Mel. Come on.
I know, but that was not his best work. I mean, he's the only thing that kind of halfway saved that show. But
I
was strangely drawn to it. I don't know why.
Yep. So, man, what a career. And it's all because she was so versatile and never got long. Even though she did Mrs. North, Pamela North, for 10 years or nearly 10 years, she still, look at all the different things she still did. She wouldn't allow herself to get pigeonholed. And you're right. You could hear how Gracie Allen could have done this role.
Good God, Dave, we've gone a half an hour. Don't you think it's time for a radio show?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, wait a minute. We did play part one. I had a small stroke there.
Oh, okay.
Mental lapse.
Hey, those short naps are the best.
No. It's a wide awake talking nap. I don't get that. But the fun you get getting old, folks. Each day's a new day.
But that means there's time. That means there's time for the second half of the Mr. and Mrs. North. Exciting, and boy, they left us. I think with a scream there. So we got to find out what happens after the soap commercial.
Yes, as we continue with the conclusion of the Contagious Confession.
And now back to Mr. and Mrs. North. The Norths and Wiegand were approaching George Warwick's house when someone began shooting at them.
Golly, is he shooting at us?
Doc Payne!
Jerry!
There he goes. He's running the back of the house. You got your gun, Jerry?
Yeah.
Good. Go around the other side. I'll go this way.
Okay.
See anything, Jerry?
Pam, you shouldn't have followed me.
Well, I wasn't going to stay back there alone.
Well, all right.
There's someone by the back door.
Yeah, back, Pam. Who's there?
Hello, that's you, Jerry.
Bill, yeah.
See anyone, Jerry?
No.
No, neither did I.
What do we do now?
Well, I guess we'd better go the other...
Help! What's that?
Someone's calling for help.
Help! Help!
It's coming from inside the house. Come on. Hit the door. It's locked. I have to break the glass. Then I can reach in, turn it out. Look out.
Okay.
There we are.
The call's coming from upstairs.
Right, let's go.
I can't see anything.
No, wait, I'm feeling for the light switch. Oh, here it is.
Oh, that's better.
Now, come on.
Hello, where are you?
In here.
Sounded like that room there.
Right.
Hello in there. The door's locked.
Break it in.
Okay, I'll shoot off the lock.
Stand back, Jerry.
There we are. Hey, where are you?
Over here, behind the bed.
What? Oh, it's Warwick.
His hands and feet tied. What happened, fella?
Larry knocked me down, tied my hands and feet and ran out.
Larry Chapman, eh?
Yes. He wore a mask, but I recognized him anyway.
He must be the one who shot at us.
Probably. I heard the shot. I wondered what was happening.
Can you roll over a little so I can get to this other nut?
Yeah.
That's it. I'll have you loose in a second.
What did Chapman want, Warwick?
Well, he must have been snooping around and heard me phone you. He's probably stolen the clue.
What clue?
The gun that killed Walter Middleton.
You mean you found the gun?
That's right.
Well, there you are, all untied.
Thanks.
Now, what about this gun?
I had it locked in my desk downstairs. Perhaps he didn't find it. Come on, we'll see.
Okay.
You see, on the night of the murder, I saw Larry throw a package wrapped in newspaper in some bushes. I didn't think anything of it until today when he mentioned wrapping the pistol in newspaper and throwing it in the bushes.
And you went back to the same spot tonight and the gun was still there?
Yes. I went back as soon as you released me. Then I went to see Helen.
Why?
I had to be sure she wasn't involved. As soon as I found out she had a perfect alibi, I phoned the North.
Oh, then you confessed before just to shield Miss Middleton.
That's right, Mrs. North.
But it wasn't necessary. Chapman had already confessed.
I know, but he was just making a play for her benefit. He's cut in enough already. Until he came along, I thought my chances with her were pretty good. Now I'm not so sure. Well, here we are. In just a second, I'll open the desk. Ah, it's still here.
Yeah, so it is. Let me see it.
Here.
Well, apparently that isn't what Chapman was after then. Maybe he just wanted a chance to shoot us.
But why would he want to kill us, Jerry?
I don't know.
Well, I can't explain it. All I know is that he knocked me down, tied me up, and then I heard him run out the door. And the next thing I knew, there was shooting.
Say, wait a minute. Let's see that.
What, the gun?
No, the paper it's wrapped in.
What is it, Jerry?
Warwick, you say you saw Chapman throw this package in the bushes on the night of the murder.
That's right.
Now, that's very strange.
Why?
Well, the murder took place a couple of days ago. But this newspaper the gun's wrapped in is today's paper.
What? Why, I don't understand.
I think I'm beginning to.
Well, there's some mistake.
I'll say there is, and you've made it.
Oh, no. You can't think that I...
Oh, can't we, though? How about that other story of yours?
Which story?
About Chapman attacking you and tying you up.
It's true. He did.
Oh, he did, huh? And then he ran out the door.
That's right.
How do you explain the fact that when we reached the door to your room, it was locked from the inside?
I don't know.
According to your story, you couldn't have locked it because you were tied up. Chapman went out through it.
Well, it must have... Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Jerry, look out. He's grabbing the
gun.
Stop
him, Bill.
No, you don't. I've got the gun now. Stand back, all of you. That's it.
Now, look here, Warwick. You
can't
get away.
Don't move. I'm getting out of here.
He's getting away.
Yes, darling. I'm afraid he is.
Oh,
And you're sure you haven't any idea where he might go to hide out, Miss Middleton?
No, I haven't.
All right, thank you. We'll run along. I'm sorry we had to disturb you in the middle of the night like this.
Well, that's all right.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, no luck here. We'll have to try something else.
You know, Bill, I can't help wondering.
About what?
If he really was guilty, why did he confess?
Oh, that was clever. By seeming to protect Miss Middleton, he threw suspicion off himself.
Of course, that's it. Bill, Jerry, I just thought of something.
You think you know where he is?
I think I know where... Wait a minute.
What is it?
Look, there's a light under the door in David Middleton's studio. Come on.
Why? You don't think Warwick's there, do you?
No, but I've just got to find out what's in there.
You and your curiosity. You know what I got you before.
Well, watch out, Jerry. I know what to look for this time.
And we've got a murderer to track down.
Oh, you men. Don't you have any curiosity? Besides, it won't take any time. Come on.
All right, let's go, Bill. There'll be no living with her until she's satisfied.
Well, all right.
Oh, you darlings, both of you.
Where's Saps?
Yep. I don't know why I agreed. I don't have to live with her.
Shh, Bill. We're getting close.
Too bad you forgot your bathing suit.
Shh. I won't touch anything this time, Jerry. I'll just stoop down and see if I can see through the keyhole.
See anything?
Yes. He's in there.
Young Middleton?
Uh-huh.
What's he doing?
Sewing.
Sewing?
Yes.
What's the idea?
I lost my balance.
Hey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my balance. I fell against the door, and I'm terribly sorry. I didn't mean to... I fell.
Doggone it. I told you to keep away from here. Oh, Mr. North, too, and the lieutenant. What do you want?
I wanted to be able to live with my wife.
Huh?
Yes, she just had to see what you have in here.
Well, now you see. I hope you're satisfied.
Donald?
Yes, I make them. Silly, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I just like to make dolls. Sort of a hobby. There's no law against it, is there?
No, not that I've heard.
I know. I ought to fool around with shortwave radio or electric motors or something. But I'd rather make dolls. Well, what are you waiting for? Why don't you laugh?
I don't feel like it.
Look, son... Is this where you were the night of the murder?
Yes. That's why I confessed. So you'd all stop asking questions about where I was. I didn't want to have to tell about it. I was safe enough. Two confessions before mine, and I could always tell the truth if I had to. But I hoped I wouldn't have to.
Oh, you shouldn't feel so ashamed, David. These dolls are beautiful. Why, you're an artist. Look, Jerry, all kinds of characters.
Yeah, they're absolutely perfect.
Look, every little detail exact. Some of these dolls are so tiny and others are almost life-size.
Thanks, Mrs. North. You can have one if you like.
Oh, thank you, I would. This little old man with a pipe.
Okay, he's yours.
Oh, thank you, David. Jerry, look, isn't he cute? Little wrinkled-up face. Jerry.
Hmm?
Dolls.
What about them?
They give me an idea. I think I know how we can catch the murderer.
With dolls?
Yes, Jerry. With dolls.
You see, Miss Middleton, it was quite a scheme. By pretending to shield you, Warwick could throw suspicion off himself.
The very confession of murder would suggest he was innocent.
And then being found tied up right after we were shot at, it would again make him seem innocent of that, too. And the gun plant would throw the blame where he wanted it.
Clever. It's too clever.
Anybody who'd work out such an elaborate scheme wouldn't make such stupid mistakes as the date on the paper and the locked door.
Besides, he's a slitherer.
A what?
A slitherer. There are two kinds of liars, twisters and slitherers. Twisters figure out three or four twists ahead and lie accordingly, while slitherers just slide into whatever lie seems to fit at the moment. Mr. Warwick is a slitherer.
But how do you know?
At the jail, Mr. Chapman was always way ahead of Mr. Warwick. He confessed first, and he lied much better. He's a twister.
It was he who confessed to throw suspicion off himself. Warwick simply confessed out of jealousy at Chapman's getting all your gratitude.
Only a twister would have thought of that first confession.
And get this twist. Instead of framing a case against Warwick, he lets Warwick frame a case against him. A case that will fold up and make Warwick seem guilty.
You mean Larry is the murderer?
Well, sure.
But then why did George run away?
He saw so much evidence piling up against him, he was afraid we'd be able to pin the murder on him. Chapman's scheme was working.
And it was an elaborate scheme, too. Chapman planted the gun in today's paper and put it in the bushes.
And after tying up Warwick, he walked to the door, slammed it, and then quietly locked it. Slipped to the window and got out that way. Warwick, on the floor behind the bed, couldn't see him.
I can't believe it. Why? Why would he do all this? Kill Father and then try to put the blame on George?
Simple. With your father's death, you and your brother share the inheritance. And by framing Warwick, Chapman hoped to eliminate him and marry you for your money.
Oh, I can't believe it. I can't.
Unfortunately, it's true. We haven't told Bill yet, but as soon as he gets here, we're going to tell him
that... You're not going to do anything. I'm shutting you up now.
All right, Chapman, drop that pistol. I've got you covered. That's it. Okay, folks, you can come out from behind the sofa.
Helen! And Mr. and Mrs. North.
Yeah, what you shot were just dummies. Life-size dolls, which you probably can see yourself now that you take the time.
Mr. and Mrs. Proxy. Oh, poor Mrs. Proxy. You hit her right between the eyes.
Helen, you were in on this. You invited me here, left the front door open so I'd come in and overhear you.
Yes, Larry.
She didn't want to. But when we convinced her that you'd killed her father, she agreed.
Well, you can come along with me, Chapman. We didn't have any proof against you before, but we have now.
Thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Proxy. Gollys, Jerry, you know something?
What?
We're not such bad twisters ourselves, are we?
Do you think a film star has an easy life? Well, she doesn't. Making a picture is unusually hard work. She has to be up at dawn to have her makeup on and be ready in time. She works all day under blazing lights. Then there are personal appearances, for every star is busy with war work these days. And off the set as well as on, she has to look glamorous. Well, the beauty care that can keep her skin soft and radiant through all that has to be remarkably effective. And here's what Veronica Lake does. The Paramount star now appearing in So Proudly We Hail. She told us...
I take the 3-minute Woodbury Beauty Nightcap every night with Woodbury Cold Cream. The beauty results are thrilling.
Well, girls, your skin may not have such hard treatment as a film star's, but if Woodbury Cold Cream can do so much for them, think what it can do for you. That's because Woodbury is much more than just cold cream. It's a complete beauty cream. Jars, 10 cents to $1.25. That's Woodbury, W-O-O-D-B-U-R-Y, Woodbury Cold Cream. Get a jar tonight. Tune in again next Wednesday evening at the same time for another adventure of Mr. and Mrs. North. For thrills and laughs, be sure to listen, won't you? This is Ben Grauer saying good night for
Woodbury, Woodbury, Woodbury.
Who the hell would buy it now?
This program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Woodbury Rap!
Jeez! We'll eat your soul! Gee, no thank you! I was just about to spread some on some toast to complete a BLT, but no way, I'm not buying Woodbury
now. No way
now,
yeah.
Nah.
No, wise decision. Wise decision.
Who will not be greasing my toast, I tell you.
Yeah.
Regardless, are we moralless or moral free?
I don't know that I have one. No, yeah.
Yeah. Grumble. All right, so neither do I. So, that being said, we'll.
Well, you know what? You can always do this, I guess.
A brainstorm, eh? All right.
Well, I had thought about it, and I thought against it, but I'll go with it anyway.
Fair enough. With intrepidation, Harry House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. When you have multiple people confessing to the same crime, it's easy to pick out which one it is, the one you want to have done it the most. There you go. Well, it was worth a shot.
The Johnny Weissmuller seal of approval.
Yeah, it's okay. He got to go swim with Maureen here, so that's okay.
Oh, my. There's some footage of some of those early. That was definitely what you call pre-code.
Yes. Whew. Yes, that was definitely pre-code.
That was one smoking hot, nice, attractive lady. Let's just say it that way.
Yeah, you look at that, you don't have to say you me Tarzan, you Jane. You know who Jane is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. And that was no tiger, let me tell you. Wow. Oh, man, we got more radio for you. And Barry Craig. Tell us more about Barry Craig, Dave.
Well, interesting. Like I said, it was kind of a late, really after the golden age of radio. It ran on NBC Radio from October 3rd, 1951 through June 30th, 1955, and starred good old William Gargan, who did a lot of movie and as well. But, you know, he also did before this television. He did the live version on, I think it was pretty much on the Dumont. There's what it was. I was looking for the Dumont series where he did Martin Kane, Private Eye. Apparently it said that he also did that for radio as well, but I have never heard any of the radio, but I have seen there's a few up there episodes of Martin Kane, Private Eye up there on YouTube and on the Internet Archive.
Yeah. For some reason, Dave, I had been collecting old radio ads, newspaper ads, you know, to liven up our ads to get people to watch.
Right.
Or draw their attention to our show, right? And for some reason, I had some Barry Craig, and it crossed over with, tell us a little bit about Barry Crane.
Off the top of my head, I can't place him with a character.
According to archive.org, it's one of the few detective radio series that had separate versions of it broadcast from both coasts. Even the spelling changed over the years. It was first Barry Crane and then Barry Craig. Because I had this ad that said Barry Crane. I'm like, why? That's just a little too close to Barry Craig. What the heck? And now I just stumbled on something that explains it.
And they had different actors, and each coast would have never heard the difference. And they could have been the same stories, just throw the different names in there.
NBC produced it in New York from 51 to 54, then it moved to Hollywood, where it aired from 54 to 55.
Which is weird, because a lot of things end up moving back to New York to leave room, more room for TV studios. Especially when it was with CBS. There was also a TV pilot for Barry Craig that William Gargan filmed in 1952. And it was written and directed by Blake Edwards. It was presented on ABC's Pepsi Cola Playhouse as Death the Hard Way on October 14th, 1954, although it was filmed in 1952. And I would wonder why something like that would not have been picked up. It just, it was already a character which many people were familiar with, and because of the radio show. And how could you miss with Blake Edwards, who was the guy that created and wrote the Sam Spade radio series, and who, of course, I think he was in charge of the Saint on television, and so many other things that he eventually. And Richard Diamond, private detective, on radio or on television as well. So
Pink
it just he went on to the movies with the Pink Panther and SOB and so many. I think 10 wasn't that was his movie as well with Bo Derek and Dudley Moore.
Yeah, I think so.
So I just he's such a talented writer, and gets and can get extra things out of actors, especially for radio, as he did. It's just hard for me to believe that they didn't want to pick this up. Really weird.
Yeah. Well, let's pick it up here for the first time on Eerie House Radio. Barry Craig, private investigator in Confession of Murder.
William Gargan.
From
5555, May 5th, 1955.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. A lady killer is sometimes the worst dressed guy around. How much of a figure can he cut in prison dress? National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Craig speaking. You meet odd exhibits in the human jungle. Walk down any street, especially when the hour is late. The species that creep by night, call them neurotic. Call them throwbacks at the time when man stalked his prey with a club. You meet them and the chill on your spine spells out the word danger.
Got a match, Cap?
Got a match. Only a device to stop you. The next demand is your wallet or your life. You reach into your pocket for a match and what you come up with, you ram into her stomach.
Heck, what's this?
A loaded gun. Hands touching the stars.
Frisk me. All you'll get is exercise, Cap. I got empty pockets.
No switchblade knife? Yeah, you do have one.
A lousy dollar knife.
I still don't want it in me, Butcher Boy.
And you? Hey, are you a stick-up or not?
You're the stick-up. I mean, would be. I'm a detective.
A dick?
You picked the wrong victim. Walk ahead of me. Hands nice and high.
You're taking me in?
I am.
Well, Cap, look, I only asked for a match.
As a prelude to mugging? Concealed weapons. There's a city ban against switchblade knives.
Cap, don't run me in. I'm asking you. Have a heart.
Allergic to the station house, huh? Yeah, that figures, too. More in your mind than a switchblade knife. I wonder what it is. I learned more about the boy from a career cop named Kennedy, Sergeant Kennedy.
Rough customer you brought in, Craig.
On the surface.
And on the inside.
You're overrating a punk. What's his record?
The usual. Petty theft, illegal entry, stolen cars, disorderly conduct, street fights.
Meaning he served time?
1 year in a correctional institution for juvenile delinquents.
What's his neighborhood gang called?
The Tarantulas, the worst of the teenage mobs.
Besides creeping by night, what does Spike Sanger do?
He's enrolled in a vocational high school, a course in repair mechanics.
Father, mother, people?
Father's dead. Lives with his mother, Mrs. Stella Sanger. Mother's a factory worker.
Sweat him, Kennedy. Find his breaking point. My hunch is you wrap up a lot of stuff currently indexed as unsolved crimes. Spike Sanger popped back into my life the following afternoon in the form of a visitor to my office. A girl of 17. Midi blouse, wide balloon skirt, ballet shoes of the Capizio type. She had books under her arm, stenographer's practice pad.
Are you Mr. Barry Craig?
Well, you entered without knocking.
I was preoccupied. I'm Bernice Cannon.
Selling magazine subscriptions?
I'm here about Spike Sanger.
Oh.
We keep company, Spike and I.
I wouldn't advertise it.
You're prejudiced against Spike, like all the rest.
The rest of society.
You fine, righteous people. You all make me sick.
Well, we got into this quarrel awfully fast.
I didn't come here intending to quarrel.
Why did you come?
To beg you to help Spike, not persecute him. To ask you to think of him as a human being.
You want me to withdraw my complaint?
How can I accomplish anything with Spike if people like you arrest him on sight?
Bernice.
Yes?
Are you employed?
Part-time as a typist. I'm taking courses in stenography at a continuation school.
I see. I'm told Spike's enrolled in a vocational high school. Whose idea was that?
Mine. It was a bargain we made. If we were going to keep company, then he...
I'll think it over. And then maybe I'll intercede for your boyfriend. I'll see if I can help him. How long have you known Spike Sanger?
All my life. Where I was born, Spike was the baby next door.
I interceded for Spike Sanger. The district attorney yawned listening to me and then brushed me out of his office. An hour later, Sergeant Kennedy explained my failure to me.
There's something the DA couldn't tell you.
What?
What's officially developed with Spike Sanger. We sweated the boy like you advised. We found his breaking point.
What did he confess to?
Armed robbery and murder. You're shocked, huh, Craig?
Yes, I am. Give me the details, Kennedy.
Well, 1 month ago in the Lower Bronx, a masked gunman stuck up the cashier of a loan association. The cashier was partly deaf, wore a hearing aid normally. But at the moment, it was turned off. He was eating his lunch. So he was slow to comply, slow getting over to the cash drawer. The gunman interpreted this as defiance. Bang! Shot the cashier dead. All amounted to over $8,000, currency and coin.
And Spike Sanger confessed to this crime?
Spelled out every detail for us, practically reenacted it for us.
Well, the story's been in the newspapers. Every detail of the crime is common public knowledge.
Spike Sanger knew stuff that never appeared in the press, Craig.
Like?
Like the exact amount of money in the cash drawer. The press mistakenly estimated it around $6,000. We never corrected them.
How much did Spike Sanger say?
A few bucks shy of $8,500. That figure was only known to the loan association management, to the insurance company involved, and to the DA's office.
I want to see Spike Sanger, Kennedy. They had Spike Sanger in the tombs. They were still sweating him, trying to get answers to other crimes listed on the books unsolved. He was on the edge of his cot, head down between his knees. In the dumps with that look on his face a guy gets when he's turning suicide over in his mind. They'd confiscated his necktie, his belt, and shoelaces.
You get out of here, Cap.
You branded yourself a killer, I'm told.
Yeah. And I'm your arrest. Pick up your medal at the front desk, hero.
Not a shred of evidence pointing at you. A crime that's a month old and cold. You've never been tagged for it.
You sound like you're mad, I confessed.
Self-protection is human nature, even among punks. It's unnatural to beg for electrocution.
So I'm a freak. Cap, get out of here.
Soon. I frisked you the other night. You were flat broke, not a red cent. Not even a whole cigarette on you. You were snitching butts from the gutter.
Oh, now you're going to make poverty a crime, huh?
What happened to the $8,500 you grabbed from the loan association till?
What happened? I blew it in.
Where?
Here and there, broads, gin mills. I played some pool. I bet on the fights. Went down to the racetrack. A pigeon has wings, so has money.
You claim to have spent $8,500 in one short month?
Listen, I've been 17 years dreaming of one big binge, so I had it. Now, Cap, will you get out of here?
How's your confession going to sit with Bernice Cannon?
Bernice?
She loves you.
Love? What's that?
How's your confession going to sit with your mother?
My mom. Ah, she's ahead. My confession puts her ahead. I've been bumming $8 a week from her. Money for smokes and the movies.
Get out of here, will you? I want you to get out of here.
Mama Sonia wasn't rejoicing over her $8 raise in pay.
I can't make you welcome in my house, Mr. Craig.
I'm not really the cause of your son's troubles, Mrs. Sanger.
You arrested Spike. His trouble started with you. If not for you...
His trouble started a long time before me, Mrs. Sanger. Post-infancy, boyhood, adolescence. Kids are okay, and then they're not okay. When did he begin to get wild?
Boy in the slums with an invalid father and a tired factory worker for a mother. A boy who was still hungry, getting up from the supper table. Never had a suit or shoes that somebody hadn't worn before him. Yet he had enough faith in his heart to go to church every Sunday with his father.
When did the father die?
When Spike was 13 years old.
Was it after the death of his father that Spike began to, get difficult? Get into scrapes?
Oh, I don't know when or what. Live in a neighborhood like this. Drunks sleeping on the stoops and in the halls. A saloon on every corner. Filth, broken plumbing, vermin. Do you expect boys to grow up into angels?
No, you can't expect... Well, do you think Spike is guilty of the crime of murder?
My son is wild, but he's not vicious. He could never kill another human being.
He's confessed that he has.
Oh, a boy tells stories. A boy tells stories to make himself great. Murderers are great people. The newspapers make them famous.
In the Sanger living room, Spike's girl, Bernice, had her own brand of scorn.
The miracle to me is that Spike didn't confess to assassinating McKinley or sinking the Titanic.
You think he lied in his confession?
I know.
Elaborate on that.
The day of the holdup in that loan association. The day and the time. Could Spike be there and be with me, too?
You're saying he was with you?
And 20 miles away from New York. We were hiking in Palisades Park. We had a cookout, frankfurters and toasted English muffins. We picnicked all day.
That's your alibi for Spike?
Go ahead. Be cynical. Mistrust everybody.
You love him. You'd naturally try to save him.
No, Mr. Craig.
No?
If Spike was a murderer, I couldn't love him.
Why would Spike confess to a crime he's innocent of?
He's bitter. He's disturbed. I don't know. I'm not a doctor.
Where could Spike have picked up certain hidden details of the loan association stick-up? Facts about it that never were accurately reported in the newspapers.
How? Gossip? Talk on the streets? Somebody boasting in a beer saloon where Spike was with his friends? Something somebody else told him?
Tell me this. Is there some man somewhere that Spike likes or admires, an older man?
Yeah, there is.
Who?
Mr. Milton. He's a school psychologist in Spike's vocational high school. Mr. Milton, Spike respects him. But why?
Just feeling my way. What if it turns out that Spike is guilty, as per his confession?
I'll cry for a long time, Mr. Craig. And then I'll never in my life cry again. Is there something I can do to help Spike?
Yes, there is. First, go down to the Legal Aid Society. Take Mrs. Sanger along. Tell them about Spike and solicit their legal help. Then give them an affidavit of that time alibi you claim for your boyfriend.
I'll do that.
And do this. That street gang Spike hangs out with.
The Tarantulas.
Drop a hint here and there. Let the word circulate on the grapevine that Spike deliberately confessed falsely.
That Spike deliberately...
For the headlines, the notoriety. That he has a way out and isn't really worried. He's got a time alibi covering the murder day. And get this rumor going. That Spike knows everything there is to know about the murder of that cashier.
Everything there is to know, meaning he knows who the real murderer is.
That's the inference I want somebody to draw. Draw the inference and get a little panicky enough to make some open move.
Yeah, I don't know if I like the idea of endangering this kid by putting him out there for the real murderer.
and having the girlfriend spreading the word.
That's like kicking somebody. All right, I'm going to catch a speeder. Let's go stand out on the freeway. What?
Yeah.
Wait. What? No.
Yeah, this is interesting. I think the writing is more of a 50s style. The music makes you feel more that way. I think it's an interesting little story, a little different than your other, probably because again, this was Martin, he was a private investigator, Barry Craig, private investigator. So it just was a little different feel than. Than the Johnny Dollars, than the Sam Spades, than the other shows that were going on at the time. Don't know that I was really a big fan of his, but I'm becoming one.
I think the other thing that the vibe I'm getting is he's like a more chill detective. He's more laid back.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what that different vibe is all about.
Yeah, you're right. It is a laid back, a chilled. He's not afraid to. Not afraid to involve other people, that's for sure.
No, jeez.
He was an American, William Dennis Gargan was a American film, television, radio actor. He was actually the fifth recipient of the Screen Actors Guild Lifetime Achievement Award in 1967. Ooh. In 1941, he was nominated for Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor for his role as Joe in They Knew What They Wanted. He acted for decades in movies, including parts in Follow the Leader, Rain, Night Flight, Three Sons, Isle of Destiny, and many others. The role he was best known for, of course, was Martin Caine, Private Eye, which was live television. There were some kinescopes of that. And he was in 39 episodes of The New Adventures of Martin Caine. At the Weirdest Really Bad Movie, we've hosted two of his movies. We've hosted the Behind Green Lights, and that was with Carol Landis's. That was about her last film that she appeared in before she offed herself. And also, he was in Midnight Manhunt with Ann Savage and Leo Gorcey in one of his few films he did during the run of the East Side Kids, the Bowery Boys, the Dead End Kids, whatever you want to call them, or whatever incarnation they were at the time. That is a fun little movie between William Gargan, Ann Savage, and Leo. Just a real fun movie. It was the second movie that we hosted all those years ago.
Wow. That's back in the time machine there, and you can check those out, on internetarchive.org?
You can find those on Internet Archive, yeah. They do have some of our shows there. And
If you can't wait for them to come up on the cable network near you or wait for them to come around again on the Vortex, you can go to internet.org and catch Weirdness Really Bad.
That's right. Just can't if you can't get enough of us, and most people can. Don't worry.
Most people can. Jeez.
Oh my! But interesting story, and I he's got a different style than any other kind of radio detective that I can think of.
Yeah. Yep, but we'll see if he gets the job done. Putting my money on it, he does. As we wrap up, and who knows, maybe we'll have time for more fun stuff, too. But we'll wrap up.
Maybe
Barry Craig, Private Investigator, Confession of a Murder.
At the vocational high school, the psychologist, Mr. Milton, showed genuine distress for Spike Sanger.
The news came as a terrible shock. You were professionally interested in Spike.
Even personally, Spike has charm and likability and cooperative qualities. Last term, he earned 14 service credits.
Well, what has been your gauge of Spike Sanger?
A certain emotional instability, normally optimistic, but then fits of depression.
What causes them?
Certain emotional maladjustment, deep feelings of inferiority, guilt. guilt's about what?
Well, I can't say. If we knew that, we could get to the root cause of his behavior.
Well, what generally did Spike confide in you?
Spike once blurted that he'd not attended his father's funeral, that he'd purposely hidden himself away all that day in a neighborhood movie.
I see. Love for the mother, not so much love for the father. Now tell me this. Could a boy confess to a crime he didn't commit?
Yes, a boy could.
Why?
Perhaps to punish himself for some other guilt, some secret feeling of guilt.
Could an innocent boy insist on his guilt in a situation where punishment might mean the electric chair?
Even so, yes. A boy bent on self-destruction could conceivably make such a confession.
If Spike is asking for execution because of some secret guilt feelings, those secret guilts can't be the common, ordinary variety.
Specify your thought, Mr. Craig.
Okay, I'll specify. Say the boy wants to pay the capital penalty. Electrocution for a crime he didn't do. That suggests that the crime he did do is right up to size. His secret guilt feelings are over murder. Some undisclosed murder. Well?
It's never as simple as that, Mr. Craig.
Why not?
Spike Sanger may feel secret guilt about some undisclosed murder, but that murder need not be actual. It can be imagined. It can be hallucinatory.
He thinks he's guilty of it, but he's not.
Yes. What we call the crime may be wholly fancied, or even if real, Spike can have magnified his own role in it, his responsibility for it.
I see. Oh, do I? Well, thanks, Mr. Milton. Bernice Cannon reported her success with the tarantula gang grapevine tuning. We met in a remote place. A wharf that looked over the Hudson River.
It feels kind of funny being so clandestine, so furtive.
Try to flush out a killer, you take risks. I don't want you spotted working with me. I don't want you hurt. Now, what's the story?
I have definite progress to report.
Well, tell me.
I dropped hints, as you told me to, about Spike's confession being false and how Spike knew every detail there was to that happening.
The robbery and murder.
Well, I spent one evening in a social club the tarantulas keep up. A horrid, dingy cellar. I didn't even have to broach the subject or be clever.
The boys were buzzing with it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, go on.
Last night, I was approached on my street by a fellow known as Lou Lennox. Lennox is older. He's at least 24.
But he's around teenagers.
A smooth person with slits for eyes. A nervous twitch here in his cheeks. Constant twitch. Once a minute. Hold your eyes. You're fascinated.
Symptoms of a drug eater, I'd say. That figures, too. Armed robbery, wanton murder, and narcotics. Now, go on.
Lennox played up to me. Every male trick of charm and insinuation. How pretty I was and my figure. Why wasn't I in show business? Then he began talking about Spike. As artfully as he could, but so obviously. He pumped me for details, and all that time, that awful twitch.
Lennox showed anxiety?
Yes. If ever I've seen a man deep down afraid. He asked me for a date, pretended he was falling for me.
He wants from you all that Spike knows about the Lone Association murder. Lennox figures a date and a few drinks will loosen you up.
It's to be tonight. Lennox has a car. He'll be outside my house.
Mm-hmm. I'll keep the date. Later that evening, I parked myself outside Bernice's house. Soon enough, Bernice's date rolled up. A souped-up convertible, built of special parts taken from a half dozen other cars. It had pink fenders. Lennox had his horn going, signaling for Bernice to come down. I went to join him. Move over, Lennox. I'll take the wheel.
Who are you?
What does my gun suggest?
Hood or a cop?
A cop. Bernice isn't disposed for fun tonight, but I am.
Fun?
Fun with you. We're going to hole up somewhere and play charades.
Play charades?
I'm going to tell you about a loan association office in the Lower Bronx and a deaf cashier who wore a hearing aid. And then, from the material I supply, you're going to tell me who done it. Lennox and
amazed even himself. He lasted all night. With the break of dawn, he reached his breaking point. At headquarters, I waited until the police stenographer completed typing up the Lennox confession. Kennedy stood around looking just a little perplexed.
Two confessions to the same murder.
Which do you believe, Kennedy?
Lennox's. He's been up for murder before, and not only that...
I'll cut. I want a carbon of Lennox's confession.
Sure. Typist is finished here.
And now I want it signed. Then I want to pass to the tombs.
Sure. Sure thing.
I watched Spike Sanger read the confession to murder, signed by Lennox.
Lou Lennox. He moved into the neighborhood when I was only a kid, 7.
He's moving out of the neighborhood and into the hot seat. And you're going home, Spike.
Home. Yeah, they'll hang out the flags and throw me a block party.
Bernice stuck with you all the way. She found Lennox for me. When a girl like Bernice is loyal to a guy, there must be something to the guy.
Yeah, wham's in the girl's head. Oh, she's crazy not to couple off with Sam Kuzak. Sam's big for music. He's out there in the Lewison Stadium summer nights. And that Lon Rathers old man owns. How the coin rolls in.
Bernice is for you, Spike. Only you, all the way.
Whams in her head. Whams.
They buried your father when you were 13, Spike. While the funeral was on, you were hard to find. You hid in the movies.
Why do you bring that up?
An idea I picked up. You got along fine with your mother, but not with your father. There you were antagonistic.
He's sat in that chair with his bum heart. Always in that chair, waiting for me to come home from school.
Waiting to get busy with something. Get busy with you.
Always lacing it into me. For nothing. The worst words he knew. And throwing things at me.
Oh, he was a nervous man. In his prime years, but a useless invalid.
Oh, sure. He had that excuse. That I was the butt. I was the goat.
Do you feel guilty about your father's death?
Feel guilty? Me?
Do you have some idea that you murdered him, Spike?
That day Pop keeled over, and then the ambulance doctor pronounced him. Pronounced?
You'd come home from school, and there'd been a quarrel, the usual quarrel. Then your father suffered a heart attack.
I killed him. I got him so excited, he fell down on the floor.
So that's it, huh? You blame yourself for a death that had to happen sooner or later. That day, or the next day, or the next week.
If I'd have shut up, if I'd kept my trap shut.
You see yourself as your father's murderer, in your secret guilt. So you tried to die for a crime you had nothing to do with.
It's crazy, huh?
You're mixed up, Spike. But you're a decent kid. In your own odd way, a very decent kid. And now that that's what's had you so confused is out in the open, I think you'll be okay. With just a little clinical help, I know you'll be very okay.
You sound like we're coming out of this friends.
We're friends. Sure, Spike. We're friends, all right.
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Confession of Murder, was written by John Robert. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Andrew C. Love. Our cast included Jack Edwards, Barney Phillips, Jane Webb, Noreen Gamill, Stanley Farrar, and Paul Richards.
Convicts tell their true life stories on The Loser tonight over most NBC radio stations.
Hey, my life story. Oh, hey, we got a caller. We got a caller here at NBC. Welcome.
Where's the peacock?
They better chime in. Better chime in.
Isn't that a peacock? They make that noise. It's horrible.
Could be.
That sounds like it. Are you able to hear me on this?
Yeah, we can.
We can.
Oh, fantastic. It's CW. How are you?
We're
doing
fine.
Great.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. That sounded like a peacock. That has it's going through the Bobby Brady syndrome.
You mean with
voice
you mean with change changes? Oh my! And
so
the fact that we all three know that reference is a very scary thing.
Yes.
Yes, how much television have we all digested? Well,
too much. Too much.
Which is why we're here today.
Yeah.
It's kind of a group therapy.
Yes, some of that clinical therapy, kid. You'll get that. Sure, kid. Sure. You'll be fine.
So did you get to catch any of the Mr. and Mrs. North, our first show?
Unfortunately, I love Mr. and Mrs. North. There was a television program.
Yes.
That was Mr. and Mrs. North, which I catch online.
Yeah, with Barbara
radio
Britton.
Place. I definitely would have to go on the archive and listen to that one. I missed that.
The television version had Barbara Britton and Richard Denning, who we heard last week on My Favorite Husband.
I think your mic is fading out, Ms.
I know him from the guy who was in The Creature.
Yeah, you're kind of fading out in and out there, CW.
Yeah,
hang on. Let me try something.
All right.
Okay. We're still here.
Any better?
You have to say
Are
a sentence
you
or two before we tell
you.
We can kind of hear you.
Can kind of hear you kind of cutting in and out. That's what makes it hard to respond to your comments at times. But that's where you say thank you, Blog Talk.
Thank you, Blog Talk.
Yeah.
Well, we heard that part anyway.
Yep. It's clipping a little bit, but we kind of get you. Yeah, Richard Denning was in Creature from the Black Lagoon. He's in a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, including the original Hawaii Five-O. I think he was the governor in the original Hawaii Five-O.
That was him?
I believe so, yes. In the original Hawaii Five-O, yeah. And very tanned he was at that point.
Wow.
Far more tanned than he was in when he was in, I think he was in an hour-long version of Michael Shane as well, or Mike Hammer. He was Mike Hammer. I think my name was Mike Hammer. Yeah. So I've seen him in a few of those, and he's okay in that. He seems to do well in whatever you give him.
Yes, he was definitely
cap. Very versatile.
Yes.
Yep. Well, folks, tomorrow night. If you haven't had enough, Dave, 7 o'clock,
and who
hasn't? Eastern.
That's right. We have the Weirdest Really Bad Movie, the 100th edition of the Weirdest Really Bad Movie on Facebook. Just go to our Facebook page. I'll probably start a cartoon before the 7 o'clock time just so that people can help find it here. But, it's our 100th show. 28 cast members got together to share memories and their favorite sketches, along with a couple of other things we were able to squeeze in there. So If you go to Facebook and put in search TWRBM, that will get you right to the Weirdness Really Bad movie page, and that should you should be able to view it from right there. We got 13 or 14 people already planning on being there, about as many hoping to be there, and we'll just see what we end up with, and have a good time sharing our movie right there.
Yep.
Yeah, TWRBM for the Weirdness Really Bad movie. So yes, that'll get you right there. Thanks, Fogs. Yeah, we're looking forward to sharing that with everybody. It was such a cool thing to put together.
I hope to be there as well. Over.
Great. Over, yeah. You're like in a telegram, you say stop after each sentence, right?
Yes. Stop.
And for those of you that are not able to make it there, we'll also be there with it on Monday night on the Vortex. Our friends at the Vortex will have the Weirdness Really Bad Movie 100th episode as well. So that's a good way to get your fill of weirdness in. And it's just kind of cool seeing what, you know, hearing the people, what they thought of the show and seeing what their favorite skits are. Sometimes it really kind of surprised me as to what their favorite bits were, because they got to choose between the hosting bits or the comedy sketches. So sometimes it really kind of surprised me what their choices were.
Everybody likes different stuff. And Dave, you've got a lot of, after 100 shows, you have literally hundreds and hundreds of skits to choose from.
Yes. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that tomorrow night and Monday night. 9 o'clock Monday night at the Vortex, but 7 o'clock tomorrow night live, Facebook Live. You can also catch it on Facebook Live. Facebook Live records it, so you can go to the TWRBM move videos, and you'll be able to find it there as well. So,
yep, and next week we're mailing it in, man. Yeah, we're slacking it off. We're mailing it in. Now, it's all about the mail with Dark Fantasy, Suspense, and NBC University Theater. Another first time, I think, on the show.
Yeah, well, it had a lot of different names. The first time probably NBC University, but we did do at least one show from NBC Theater or something like that, or University Theater. Let me see. Yeah, and one of them is a Poe story.
Cool. And then on Saturday, it's the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater, and we're going to squeeze in a suspense, too, somehow. Some way. We'll do it. Hey, even if we have to be here 2 hours, we're getting it done. That's what we do.
Well, if we cut out most of the commercials from the Mystery Theater, and I think this is one of the late, from the early 60s, suspense. Those are always a little bit shorter, right around the 20, 25-minute mark.
But I like the commercial.
Sometimes they don't come with the commercials because, remember, these are all fan-recorded, and these are there because people bothered to record them and for a while trade them amongst each other after the Mystery Theater went off the air. And just so much, so we get what we get, and it's amazing some of the recordings that they've been able to come up with over the years.
Yep,
of these.
CW, if you like, you can stick around. Thanks, Fogs, for listening live, and them what we can't see, and them what are listening into the archive. We'll hear what we have to say next. Good night. We'll see you next week and tomorrow on Facebook. For Weirdness Really Bad, number 100.
Castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
There we go.
Timed it well.
Yeah.
Once.
There you go. Well, you can't always tell because the counter that we have is not exactly accurate.
Yeah.
So
there's like lag time or something. Must be how it streams through the
British
audio.
Time or some such thing.
Limey-timey.
More like drunk time, the way that the counter goes sometimes. It goes back and forth and back and forth, and there it is. Standard drunk time.
Yes. But here we are, April 10th. Where is the first third of the year is over? Jeez. Time flies when you're on lockdown.
Yes. Soon will be 2022.
Oh, geez.
And I'm still waiting for, where is it?
Still waiting for what? I'm sorry?
I'm still waiting for my starship. Where is it?
Oh, okay.
Starship. Get me out of here. There's no intelligent life. Run! Run! And I'll tell you what, CW, if you enjoyed that Halloween show, I think you're going to like it. It's going to be kind of like a World War II flavored music show. And that'll be May 1st, our 500th Eerie Ounce Radio.
Wow. 500. Wow.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Dave, we're in year 5, I think. We completed 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah. We're in year 5, so yeah. And just not giving up the ship, I guess, yet. So
yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yep.
Never give up. Surrender.
Never surrender. Never.
Never,
Lord,
never, just, never.
Never take me alive. And actually, Eerie House Radio in general, when it first started off as a talk show, is going to be 5 years old sometime like July or something.
Yeah, that's right about the time you kicked in Eerie House Radio. So.
Yep. And then here we are, geez, 5 years later. What the hell happened? A lot of radio happened.
Yeah, I have more white hair and pandemic waste.
I have not cut my hair once since the pandemic.
Wow.
Starting to look like Cousin Ed.
A very tall Cousin Ed.
Well, an old gray Cousin Ed. An old gray, slightly overweight Cousin Ed. An old gray, slightly overweight Cousin Ed that has high sugar. An old... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, the waistline has suffered mightily. Thank you, COVID-19, for people who once had a 19-inch waist.
Well, what's worse for me is I've been blessed to work for a company that enables me to work from home. So you know what I mean? We haven't been hit financially. But the thing is, the wife retired, and she's like the greatest cook in the world, so you can imagine... That I'm kind of, what's that Steve McQueen movie? Yeah, The Blob. kind of where I'm headed, you know?
Yeah.
I'm
going to
be like that meme of the fat kid that plays video games leaning back on the chair with the controller on his chest. Job of the host.
So do you text your wife... oh, dear, could you come over here because I can't quite reach that pencil?
No, but what I'll do is during the day, I'll leave her cell phone in the kitchen, okay? And then when she goes to get herself something, I'll text her while you're in there.
Sneaky.
Could you please bring me, it's, I don't know how she puts up with me. I don't know. Yes, she's a saint.
Well, really over. No, maybe this retirement is not all it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Yep.
She likes keeping busy, so I'll tell you what, it's not like she's running around the house with nothing to do. We got a lot of, it's springtime, everything's coming to life, and our yard looks so nice, especially in the back. My fruit trees are blooming. Oh, they're awesome.
Yay!
Yep. Springtime.
I haven't had any luck. I mean, I planted a bunch of bird seed. Not one bird has grown from it.
No?
I'm telling you. Yeah. I'm taking that bag back to the store.
Does it bring other birds, maybe, who eat the seed? Because you could try that.
What?
Maybe that would work.
What?
We have this African gray parrot, and it's a sloppy eater, right? So there's often a lot of seed at the bottom of the cage, and we collect it, and we throw it out on the patio so that the birds have something to eat, the wild birds. We get all kinds of them out here, man. There's a bunch of goldfinches and red-winged blackbirds and cardinals. We get the buzzards.
Do red-winged blackbirds attack you?
It yelled at me today because I have a feeling I was getting close to a nest because there was a male and it yelled at me, and then the female came over and yelled at me too. So I'm assuming they might be nesting.
Yes, you haven't lived until you've been dive bombed by one of those, and I can attest, it's not fun.
No, any bird, when they're ticked off, if you're not protecting their babies, you're on your own, man.
Oh, yeah, it's Hitchcock time.
Oh, if Hitchcock happens out here, I'm doomed. I mean, in addition to what I mentioned, we have, okay, we get those buzzards, two or three kinds of hawks, giant blue herons, and yes, there's been bald eagles in my yard too. Jeez, we're doomed.
Yeah, you're done. Give us a last Facebook hurrah before they start smashing through the windows.
Well, I think if I keep eating, they won't be able to carry me away. Or had a little bird hernia trying, you know. Oh, my God, what were we thinking? This guy weighs a ton. So
yeah, they have to call in for stop to call in for backup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting old. Why the hell am I laughing?
Yeah, it's like I said, the wife and I went into this restaurant, and it was a time of day when there aren't very many young people, and I thought to myself, man, this place is nothing but a bunch of old people. I said, crap, I'm an old people.
Yeah. Oh, crap, I fit in. No.
Yeah.
Ooh,
I'm just
looking ahead. We got more goodies coming, too. Inner Sanctum, Shadows coming back. Sounds of Darkness, what's that? Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh.
That sounds good.
Sounds of Darkness. Yeah, I have to get down there and see that one. I'm not
Traitor
sure.
Traitor Beware. Ooh, that's the title of it. It does sound cool.
Sounds of Darkness sounds like another one of those South African series.
Good heavens, what
sorry,
the...
guys. That's a ring I have for my son.
You have the weirdest ringtones. You have the weirdest ringtones.
Yeah, I have Alvin and the Chipmunks. For my youngest son, I have Alvin and the Chipmunks singing Bad Day because it's just like my son is always having a bad day. So he's supposed to be down in Columbus, so I wasn't expecting to hear from him, so I'll have to call him back in a bit here and see what's going on.
Having a bad day, thought I'd share.
Yeah, well, it's better when he talks to me because sometimes he has a little bit of a temper problem. So when he talks to me, he can get it out, and then he's a little calmer. So
Yeah.
It's always a good
all
thing.
All right. We're gonna leave this up to you, CW. You ready? Next time we have a Hitchcock drive-in double feature, would you rather Suspicion and Notorious or Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Rebecca? Decisions.
And Rebecca. I like Rebecca. Selection you gave me. Rebecca is my fave.
All right. We'll probably have to arrange that, huh, Dave?
Yes, we can arrange that. Yes, we can.
Yeah, because we got to. Dave, you keep finding all this good stuff. We're going to have Dashiell Hammett driving again someday in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
Another confession weekend.
The Thin Man.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get some Thin Man coming back.
And we got
there aren't too many of those now since COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Not too many.
That's true.
The Fat Man will be back. You have a Fat Man?
Yes, I will.
There's plenty of those
yes,
now since COVID.
Yeah, no COVID shows.
No,
not
no.
Yet.
We did have one on the wall, though.
Yeah.
You know what? I was thinking about one. I already know two stories on Bad Medicine.
You mean that song by Bon Jovi?
No. That'd be the theory because there's an X-Men 1 Bad Medicine, and there was a mystery theater, a really good mystery theater that ends up being Bad Medicine. So, you know, we'll have to let me see what other Bad Medicine shows I can find to finish up that weekend. Or Bad Medicine Men
there's
or something.
There's also a Kolchak episode called Bad Medicine as well. Just an FYI.
Yes, there is.
Any Kolchak reference is appreciated. It's a house favorite.
Indeed it is.
Your show, is it not?
I don't know. It was.
I don't know. Well, we got some bad connection here.
Yeah, we do. Maybe we should try and. There's not much we can do. If we do that, then we lose everything. So,
yeah.
Perhaps
the only thing I can do is I don't know if it'll let me call you on a different device.
No, it won't.
Now that the show's ended, I can't take new calls.
So,
Log
perhaps
talk. This is all your fault.
It is. So since we're having some trouble bringing in, maybe you should bring in Jimmy Durante, which we have no technical difficulties bringing in.
Very well. Without further ado, Mr. Durante, take it away. Over and out.
Good night.
Bye, CW. Good
night. It's time to say good night.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Ooh.
it, Slim.